God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things. This is Brother Hutchings inviting the listeners to another Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. And here now is Brother Jerry.
Thank you, Brother Hutchings. Today and tomorrow, Dr. Bob Glaze will be visiting once again with Bill Schnebelin, whom we've had on the program several times recently. Today's topic is Mormonism. Brother Bill will be telling what qualifies him to talk about the subject during the program, so I won't get into that here. But Brother Bob, why are we doing programs on Mormonism this week?
I think this is a very good time to be discussing this subject in light of the political situations and so forth, what's going on in our nation today. Bill, welcome to our program.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It's good to have you back. I've watched the video now a couple of times. I watched it again this morning. It's about 2.5 hours long, but it's hard to even stop because it's so interesting. Bill, before we get started, I want you to give us a little history on your background, if you would, so we'll understand exactly where this is coming from and the fact that you are authorized or that you're able to speak on this subject.
Well, to kind of give you the short version, I mean, I basically was raised Catholic, wanted to be a priest. I had a professor in the seminary, a minor seminary, tell me that Jesus had been an occultist, that he had gone to the Far East and he had studied with gurus and lamas and Egyptian magi and all this kind of weird stuff. And if I wanted to be a priest, I should do the same thing. So I started studying the occult. I mean, what did I know? I was 18 years old, and back then, at least, Catholics didn't know very much at all about the Bible, so I was like a babe in the woods. And so I started reading up on the occult, and I'm kind of a compulsive overachiever. And so when I finally ended up becoming a witch, and at that point I decided I didn't want to go for the Catholic priesthood because I was going to be a witch priest. And so I graduated from college. Later on I met my wife, and we were both former Catholics who had become witches. And so we had a witch hand fasting, and then later on a legal wedding with a spiritualist minister. We were ordained as spiritualist ministers. Then a little later on, I got involved in masonry because I studied the Druidic rite. And at that point, things were not, you know, they were gelling to the place where this Druid guy who was put in North America, he said that if you ever got in trouble as a witch, as a high priest, Druidic witch, you should join the Mormon Church, because the Mormon Church was started by witches for witches, expressly for the purpose of a place where someone like us could kind of hang out, you know, and appear to be a nice, white-bred, all-American, conservative person, you know, in America. Anyhow, we kind of filed that away and forgot about it. And then later on, I became a Freemason, because this same fellow, the Druid, had told me to become a Freemason. And then I got involved in Satanism a little bit later, deeper and deeper into all these things. And of course, what people may not understand is that all of these things all flow, they're all like tributaries from the same satanic river. Because, of course, Mormonism was started with elements of Freemasonry in it. Joseph Smith, who started the Mormon Church, was a Freemason. And of course, many Freemasons are witches and even Satanists. So it all kind of blends together at the higher levels. Well, I even got involved in later on, as I got lower and lower, if you will, into Satanism, I got involved in drinking blood and being a vampire and all kinds of weird stuff. And at that point, you know, the Lord intervened in my life. I got a check that I had written from, every year I had to write a check to the Church of Satan to pay for your dues, you know. And I got it back from the bank, and some lady had written on the check that was probably a bank officer in San Francisco where the Church of Satan had its bank, "I'll be praying for you in the name of Jesus." So what happened was, is I just laughed, because I, at that time, I was so deceived, I thought Jesus was the son of Satan. And I just assumed this lady was some dumb Christian who didn't know anything, and I threw the check in my file and forgot about it. Well, within a couple days, I was like shattered. I mean, something came into my life. I didn't know what it was. It took away all my magical power. I was as sick as a dog. I lost my job. I mean, all my occult power went away. It was really quite bizarre. And I cried out to Lucifer for a sign. What's going on here? Because I was supposedly a priest of Satan. I'd sold my soul to the devil. I was supposed to get all these wonderful, you know, bennies, you know, and instead here I was basically one step away from being a homeless person. And if my wife hadn't been working at the time, I would have been out on the street. So anyway, even though I prayed to Lucifer, God responded, which he's perfectly free to do, of course. And he sent these two teenage Satanist girls up from Chicago to meet with me, and they brought with them two Christian comic books about the dangers of the occult. And I thought, well, this is dumb. You know, why would I want to read these? I just glanced at them and threw them in a drawer and forgot about them. But, you know, that's kind of amazing when you think about it, that God could use two teenage Satanist girls to bring the gospel to somebody. So anyhow, I was too proud. I was too full of myself. And I just kind of forgot about it. Then the next day, there's this knock on the door, and it's two Mormon missionaries. And both Sharon and I, my wife, remembered what was the deal, that we had been told this by this Druid guy some 6 years earlier. And we thought, well, this is the answer. This is the sign we need. So we joined the Mormon church. And I was I tried to be a really good Mormon. I mean, I stopped doing all the dope smoking, you know, tried to live according to the rules of the Mormon church. Except, of course, I still practiced white witchcraft, because I had been led to believe that the leaders of the Mormon church down through the decades have all been witches, high-level, you know, sorcerers and whatever. So I thought there was nothing inimical to that. So I spent 4 years as a Mormon. I went through the temple, and I know we're going to talk about that later, but I discovered the temple was a highly occultic environment, even though Mormons think it's this holiest place on earth that you can possibly be. Anyhow, gradually the Lord was working on me, because I was reading the Bible every day, because Mormons are supposed to do that, and thankfully they use a King James Bible, like I tell people, even a broken clock is right twice a day. So the Mormons get some things right, you know, and they got, so I was reading the Bible, and I started to get convicted. And finally, one day I was reading after I had risen to a position of church leadership in the local ward. I was in what's called an elders quorum president. And I was, reading my Bible one evening after being out and doing all this home teaching that Mormon elders are expected to do every month. And I was just exhausted from all the stuff I was being expected to do. And I opened it up, and Matthew 11, and I read about, you know, how come unto me, all you that are heavy laden, and I will give you rest, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light, and you will find rest for your souls. That was the promise of Jesus. And I thought, well, boy, I'm in the wrong outfit then or something, because I'm not feeling very rested and I don't feel like this is an easy yoke or anything. And so this little voice in my head told me, go to Matthew 23. And I didn't even know the Bible well enough to know what Matthew 23 was, but I went to Matthew 23, and then I think it's the second verse I read, you know, he's talking about the Pharisees, the Lord is, and he says, you know, for you bind heavy burdens and grievous to you born on people, and you will not lift even a finger to help them. And that's what I felt like, because I was trying to help all these Mormons that were, many of them were struggling with the demands of their faith, and, you know, and I wasn't really able to help them. And so at that point, I kind of really had doubts. And then the next thing that really happened was is that my wife wanted to go to nursing school. At this time, we were still in Milwaukee. She wanted to move back to Dubuque to go to nursing school. And so we went back there. And I was sort of without a job because I'd moved and was looking for a new job in a new city. And there was this thing in the mail about a prophecy seminar. And I thought, well, I'll go to that because I'm a member of a church that has a living prophet. And I can maybe, you know, get some people to join my church, which is still at that time the Mormon church. And so I went to this prophecy seminar, and this guy just literally filleted me alive with the Word of God. I mean, every time I tried to be a smart aleck and bring up something, you know, he would have a Bible answer for it. And finally I said, well, what do you do, where do you get the authority to baptize so people can be saved? And he said, where do you get the idea that you have to be baptized to be saved? It says in Acts 16:31, believe in the Lord Jesus Christ and thou shalt be saved and thy whole household. And that was the verse that God had for me. And so it just kind of went through my magic Mormon underwear and hit me in the heart. And it was like, wham, you know, and I went home that night. I didn't give in just yet. I was trembling. I went home, I prayed, and I fasted. And I prayed because that's what Mormons are supposed to do when they're confronted with some profound spiritual question. And finally, I just thought, I've tried everything else, every godforsaken thing under the sun. I remember those comic books. And so I pulled them out from a box that was like in the closet. I knelt at the foot of my bed and I took off my Magic Mormon underwear so there'd be no static on the lines. And I prayed the prayer that was in the back of those books and I got born again. That was in June of 1984. And then I was called into ministry in 1986 and got ordained and became involved with Ed Decker and Saints Alive and Jesus, where I worked for 5 years before we started our own ministry now, which is with One Accord. So that's kind of the short version.
Well, that's a fantastic testimony. You know, your experience of all these other stuff, the cults, the Freemasons, the witchcraft and all these things, through those, what you'd already learned about them, you could see all of those in the Mormon Church. Most members of the Mormon Church don't have that past experience, so they can't actually see what's going on in their church, can they?
No, that's exactly right. They're wonderful people. I mean, most Mormons are exemplary individuals, but because they trust and they've been kind of lied and deceived to it in a way that you wouldn't believe, they're trapped in a false religious system and they're lost as a golf ball in a wheat field.
Well, you know, another gospel is nothing new. I'd like to read just a few verses in the book of Galatians with Paul. When Paul was writing to the Galatians, they were wrestling with this same problem. In Galatians chapter 1, verse 6 through 9, I think, describes exactly what we're doing here and the answer to it. It says, I marvel that ye are so soon removed from him that called you into the grace of Christ unto another gospel, which is not another, but there be some that trouble you and would pervert the gospel of Christ. But though we or an angel from heaven preach any other gospel unto you than that which we have preached unto you, let him be accursed. And as we said before, so say I now again, if any man preach any other gospel unto you than that ye have received, let him be accursed. And of course, the Mormon gospel is another gospel. They even say that it's another gospel.
It was even brought supposedly by an angel.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, that's three strikes and you're out here. So let's get into, for just a few minutes, about the history of the Mormonism and the Mormon Church. And you mentioned something in the video about Woodscape. Would you kind of define that?
Well, apparently, according to the researchers of a Mormon historian, D. Michael Quinn, who has since been kicked out of the church, they like to do that with people that tell the truth in their historical background. Joseph Smith's father was involved with a group called the Woodscape. And this was a bunch of guys that believed they had supernatural powers and used like witching rods or divining rods or something like that to find treasure. And so at that time, this is like, you know, the early 19th century, late 18th century, they were out there. There was a belief that there was pirate treasure buried all over, like, New York and New England and whatnot, rural New York. So there was these guys would kind of make a living of sorts, pretending to go around and, like, do water witching to find this gold under the earth. And that was kind of the environment in which Joseph Smith was raised. You know, he basically was raised in a family of con men. And his mother, in her authorized biography, autobiography, his mother, Lucy Mack Smith, also talked about how they cast magic circles and they practiced the faculty of Abrac. Now, that your listeners might not be familiar with, but Abrac is a short form of the word abracadabra, which, of course, a lot of people have heard of as like kind of a funny thing to do, like for magic. But that's actually an authentic magical incantation. So his mother was basically saying, we were magicians. We did magic circles. We were hocus-pocusing and abracadabbering all over the place. And so you can imagine what a young man would be like being raised in this environment. And there were other things around, too, because not far away from where Joseph Smith was brought up was the Ephrata community in Ephrata, Pennsylvania, which was a bunch of, like, Rosicrucians that was really the first occult group to come to the New World. And could go and see their cloister even to this very day. It's like an historical landmark in the city of Ephrata. And they had many of the similar ideas that later on Joseph Smith adopted into Mormonism. So it's like, you know, if you look at it, Mormonism is like this kind of quilt of traditional Christian concepts, Freemasonic concepts, Gnosticism, Rosicrucianism, a lot of weird things just sort of got put together by this man. And, of course, Mormonism changed. I don't know if we're getting off topic here, but you can track how in the early days Mormonism was more Christian. It was more Orthodox. But then as Joseph Smith grew older, and I agree with some historians that believe he was basically a con man that let his con get away from him. And it ended up, of course, costing him his life. So the story is, that the official church story about all this is that Joseph Smith was not raised in a church home or anything. I mean, he had no understanding of the Bible. And at that time, there was a lot of revival going on in that region. It was actually called the Burned-Over District, because the Methodists had gone through there and had great revival meetings, and then the Congregationalists had gone through and had great revival meetings, and then the Baptists, and, you know, so it was like the whole area was just like almost like a place that was burned out, you know, because there was so many revivals going on. And he had gone to some meetings, and he felt supposedly convicted in his heart, and he didn't know what church to join, because the Methodists were saying they were the ones, you know how it goes. And so he went home, and he got down the family Bible, which is apparently sitting rather dustily on a shelf, you know, no, it hadn't been used for a long time. And the story is that it fell open to James chapter 1. And he read this passage, you know, of, if any man needeth wisdom, let him ask of God, who giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not. And so he thought, well, okay, I'm going to go ask God what church to join. And so supposedly the story goes, he goes out into the woods near his home, because they lived in a rural area near Palmyra, New York. And he starts praying, and the way it goes is that he supposedly, as he's praying and asking God what church to join, all of a sudden this darkness, this immense darkness falls on him, and he thought he was actually going to be killed. And then out of this darkness there appears this pillar, this shaft of light coming down. And then in this shaft of light are two personages of equal brightness and glory. They look exactly alike, and they're clothed in white robes, and they have white hair and beards. And the one personage says to the other, points to the other personage and speaks to Joseph Smith and says, this is my beloved son in whom I'm well pleased. Hear him. And so this vision proceeds to tell Joseph Smith not to join any church because they were all filthy in his sight, that they had a form of godliness, but they denied the power thereof, and that therefore Joseph Smith should just go back home and wait for further instructions. So he goes back home and promptly joins the Methodist Church, and they kicked him out for being a glass looker a few weeks later. So at that time, you know, and of course I'm giving you the church version at this point, there's whole other versions, but the story is that he had this vision in his bedroom with this angel named Moroni appears to him in his bedroom and tells him that there are these gold plates. And it's just happened to occur on the fall equinox, which is a witch holiday. And so for the next 3 years, this angel appears to him and tells him about this supposed gold plates. And finally, he's considered worthy to go up to the top of this hill near where he lived, which is known as now Hill Cumorah. It's a big Mormon landmark now. And he digs up these gold plates. Supposedly these gold plates are what came to be known as the Book of Mormon. And they're like revelations that were written down like 1,200 years earlier and before by people that lived on the Americas that were descended from Jews. And it tells the story of this whole civilization that was started by a family that came over during the days of Jeremiah the prophet and landed in the New World, and they set up, you know, like a camp somewhere in the New World. And so Joseph Smith starts, you know, being commissioned supposedly to go out and spread this message that Jesus Christ was in the New World and that he wants to restore his church. Those are two of the distinctive messages of Mormonism. And gradually, you know, he began to acquire some followers because apparently he was a very charismatic individual, a very glib talker, and he ended up getting a guy, I think it was Oliver Cowdery, but don't quote me on that, to finance the publication of this book, the Book of Mormon. And in 1830, it was published, and he had supposedly translated it by the gift and power of God. And what he would do is he'd have the golden plate sitting on his desk, and he would look into a hat, a stovepipe hat, and there'd be this rock at the bottom of the hat. And he'd look in this rock, and in the rock which is supposedly a seer stone, would appear these letters that would translate, because the Book of Mormon was written in Reformed Egyptian, which nobody's ever heard of that language, of course, but that's what he said. So anyhow, they're selling the book, and it's getting big, and he's gathering hundreds and hundreds of followers, but people are also opposing him, because, of course, he's basically telling everybody that all their churches are basically full of it, that the whether you're Lutheran, Baptist, Catholic, Methodist, it doesn't matter, all these churches are apostate, and only his church will get you to heaven. And so naturally there was opposition. I'm not saying it was all godly. I mean, he got rode out of town on with tar and feathers on a rail a few times, and he got thrown in jail a few times, and they basically had to flee from New York to Kirtland, Ohio, where they actually built a temple, and from there to Independence, Missouri, and every place they went, they kind of get eventually run out of town. And finally, they ended up on the river in southern Illinois, the Mississippi River. They took over a swamp and named it Nauvoo, and they built a whole little community there. And that was kind of where they were going to make their last stand, because it was kind of out on the frontier. They didn't think there'd be that many people to mess with them. And in the meantime, he was sending out missionaries, and the church was growing. And believe it or not, because all these Mormons were coming from England, from Europe, from all over Eastern America, that Nauvoo actually was bigger than Chicago for a while. It was the largest city in the state of Illinois. And Joseph Smith was very powerful. I mean, he literally was kind of like more important than the governor of the state, because he controlled, I mean, basically he would tell everybody how to vote and so on and so on.
This is a fascinating study. Again, we've been speaking with Bill Schnebelin, and we've been discussing his new DVD on Mormonism's Temple of Doom. This is a fascinating DVD. It's not just text or just a talking head, though he does present it. There's a lot of actual photographs, there's a lot of replications and so forth here, things that are in the temple, about these different individuals, pictures that have been drawn and so forth. So this is not just a presentation of just text. This is a tremendous video. Bill, thank you so much for being with us today.
You bet.
Don't miss tomorrow's program when Brother Bill shares more interesting information about the Mormon Church. And don't miss getting his compelling DVD, Mormonism's Temple of Doom. The 140-minute presentation is available in appreciation of a $25 contribution in the U.S., $27 in Canada. To get it, call 1-800-652-1144. Write to Southwest Radio Ministries, Post Office Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma 73008, or visit the website at swrc.com. The Mormon Church, LDS, has grown over the years from a small fringe cult to a major world religion. The Mormon people are, by and large, decent and moral people who stress deep family relations, but the Mormon family is not the Christian family, and Brother Bill vividly points that out in this informative DVD. You may also want the two programs in this series. They're available on CD or tape for an offering of $14 in the U.S., $15 in Canada. To get the DVD for a $25 gift in the United States, $27 in Canada, phone 1-800-652-1144. Write to Southwest Radio, Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma, 73008. Website is at swrc.com. This program is on this station only by your tax-deductible contributions. Next over many of the stations is a Bible in the News report. Join Dr. Glaze and Bill Schnebelin tomorrow for your Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. Welcome to today's Bible in the News report as we consider a recent story from a biblical viewpoint. It's a feature of your Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. Reporting is Dr. Larry Spargimino. Brother Larry, there have been a variety of responses to the death of Osama bin Laden. In various parts of the world, Islamic radicals have been threatening to get even with America. In America, there has been jubilation and parties. What is a Christian response to the death of bin Laden?
Well, Jerry, bin Laden's death was a victory for many. On September the 11th, 2001, America lost more than lives. We lost many of our liberties. Because of bin Laden, huge sums of money have been spent on surveillance and security. Pat-downs and body scans are now commonplace. God is a God of justice and often metes out justice through human systems of justice and through governments. The scripture teaches that the civil magistrate is God's minister of justice. Romans 13:4 says that, quote, "He beareth not the sword in vain, for he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil," close quotes.
Bin Laden was a very evil man who brought untold suffering and evil upon thousands and many millions of people.
Yet, Jerry, the mandate of Romans 13 was not given to the church. It was given to the government. The church does not wield a sword of steel. When Christians have forgotten this, the result has been devastating witch hunts, book burnings, and a kind of Christian jihad, all in the name of God. When Jesus Christ was on the cross, he made petition to his heavenly Father for those who put him on the cross. You can read that in Luke 24, verse 34. He did not pray for justice, but for mercy. Some of the revelry and celebrations that have taken place across our land are reminiscent of the shocking celebrations of many in the Islamic world who praise their God for the devastation, mayhem, and death on 9/11. Should a Christian's response be the same? Bin Laden was a confused and evil man, but some of the things about America that grieved him should also grieve us. Bin Laden often spoke out against the shallow superficiality of American life, the gaudy pornography and shameful movies that are becoming so popular, and the aberrant behavior shown in same-sex marriage and the endorsement by American leaders of lifestyles that have always been detrimental to any society. Was bin Laden far off the mark when he said that America is corrupt and degenerate? You know, a strong military is necessary in a world of fanatical religious ideologues like Osama bin Laden. He will take no more lives. Navy SEAL Team 6 has made it impossible for him to do further harm.
The members of SEAL Team 6 are to be honored for their courage, efficiency, and willingness to complete the mission.
However, while justice requires the punishment of the perpetrators of injustice, it never requires revelry over their demise. Proverbs 24:17 states, and I quote it, "Rejoice not when thine enemy falleth, and let not thine heart be glad when he stumbleth," close quotes.
That's today's Bible in the News Report, a presentation of Southwest Radio Ministries. Reports are published each month in a booklet. You can get a complimentary copy by calling, writing, or visiting our website. Phone 1-800-652-1144. Write to Southwest Radio, Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma, 73008. Website address, swrc.com. Join us for the next Your Watchman on the Wall program, when once again we include a Bible in the News report.